Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Brian Lynn, Christopher Jones Cruz, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, Anne Ball will have this week's Science in the News report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
British Prime Minister Theresa May will let a Chinese company invest in Britain's Hinkley Point C nuclear power center. Some people are concerned the decision will open Britain's nuclear industry to more than investment money from China. The Hinkley Point C power plant, near Somerset, England, is expected to cost $24 billion. The plant is to be jointly owned by Electricité de France and China General Nuclear Corporation. Electricité de France will supply 2 nuclear reactors. Observers say the joint project could clear the way for Chinese involvement in another British energy project. A planned nuclear center at Bradwell in eastern England could be the first to use imported Chinese nuclear technology in a Western country. China General Nuclear Corporation says it has already signed an agreement on possible work at the Bradwell Center. Only a few countries, such as Pakistan, use Chinese reactors. However, approval of the Bradwell B project could be important. British approval of a Chinese-designed reactor could open doors for Chinese nuclear exports to the West. Prime Minister Theresa May halted the Hinkley Point project last July and then ordered a study of security risks related to the project. However, she canceled that decision after meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping at the recent Group of 20 Nations gathering in Hangzhou. The British government did amend the contract for the Hinkley Point project. It put in place terms barring the Chinese company from gaining majority ownership of the plant if the French company pulls out. Critics also question a part of the contract that provides for a fixed electricity rate for 35 years. They argue that energy prices are falling and are expected to be lower in the future. Nick Timothy is an advisor to the British leader. Timothy has been critical of China's part in the project and Chinese investment in Britain's infrastructure. He said, "No amount of trade and investment should justify allowing a hostile state easy access to the country's critical national infrastructure." Others say security is important to May. However, they say she was seeking Chinese investment because of a major need to increase electricity production. The projects also represent a move away from coal-based electricity production. For China, British approval of the Hinkley Point project can improve the country's image in an important industry. David Gossett is director of the research group Academia Sinica Europaea. He called the possible nuclear deal a highly significant form of cooperation. Gossett added that it might represent an increased level of cooperation between Britain, Europe, and China. "We are now witnessing the constitution of a new China-EU-Europe triangle. It is a slow and complex process, but it will be defining the future of the relations between China and Europe," he said. I'm Mario Ritter.
A popular travel blogger is being criticized for writing only good comments and posting fun videos from a trip to North Korea. British world traveler Louis Cole posted the videos on his YouTube channel last month. The videos were recorded during a 10-day trip with a group of friends. His YouTube channel has nearly 2 million subscribers, and he has more than 800,000 followers on Twitter. Some social media followers and the activist group Human Rights Watch criticized Cole for not showing the realities of life in North Korea. One user responded to a photo Cole posted on Instagram of him surfing with a smiling North Korean boy. "You have to be realistic, man. Not everything is smiles and rainbows." The user said Cole's information was usually realistic and useful for travelers. "I'm disappointed that you weren't just as honest and realistic on this latest trip. Sure, this was probably 100% orchestrated, and you weren't allowed to film anything they didn't allow you to." Cole says he purposely tried to focus on the beautiful, positive things from the trip. His videos showed him surfing, visiting a water park, and sightseeing across the country. He did not focus on the fact that North Korean government officials controlled where he could go and who he could talk to. After his visit, Cole released a video explaining his postings about the trip.
"I am not an investigative journalist. I don't really do political commentary, and there are other places on the internet you can go to find those kind of things."
He denied a suggestion that he might have been paid by the North Korean government to make a propaganda video.
"The assumption I made, which may have been wrong of me, was that people watching my North Korea vlogs would have already had a broader perspective on North Korea."
Another social media critic said the video and photo postings did not show the real North Korea, the one in which the majority of North Koreans live in poverty and have their rights stripped from them. "The pictures you're posting are just a glimpse of what they want you to see." The deputy director of Human Rights Watch for Asia, Phil Robertson, told VOA he agrees with the criticisms.
"Our concern was that this guy was portraying just such a relentlessly positive message about North Korea that is completely out of line with what we know about the human rights abuses there."
The United Nations General Assembly has voted to refer North Korea's leadership to the International Criminal Court. A UN report documented between 80,000 and 120,000 political prisoners inside the country. It also linked North Korean officials to acts including murder, torture, rape, forced abortions, and sexual violence. Cole answered his social media critics in a post on Instagram. Many people saw our trip to North Korea and our positive interaction with people as controversial, he wrote. It was moments like this, breaking down the barriers that separate this beautiful country from the rest of the world, that make me honored to have been a part of this group. Robertson, however, said he does not believe the travel posts were building cultural bridges. He said Cole did not research the real North Korea and gave the country's government a lot of free publicity. I'm Brian Lynn.
On election night in the U.S. this year, reporters will talk a lot about places that are not familiar even to most Americans. Hamilton, Bucks, Chester, Hillsborough, and Pinellas. They are not U.S. states and they are not U.S. cities. They are just a few of the more than 3,000 counties across the country. The U.S. Census Bureau calls counties the primary political and administrative divisions of states. In other words, a county is part of a state. It can be as small as a few square miles, or it can be tens of thousands of square miles. Each state has an average of 62 counties. However, Hawaii and Delaware have only 3. Texas has the most counties, 254. Counties were among the first local governments created in the original 13 American colonies in the 1600s. The first counties were created so that the area's main city, called the county seat, was no more than one day's travel by horse for people who lived within the county's borders. The county government headquarters, county courthouse, and land ownership records are in the county seat. The root of American counties is in England, where local governments of the king were called shires. The king created these shires 1,000 years ago to help him rule his country. The top law enforcer in these shires was called the shire reeve. This became the word sheriff. The shire reeve acted as both the local government and the representative of the king. After the Norman conquest of England in 1066, shires began to be called counties, a French word. In Alaska, counties are called boroughs. In Louisiana, they are called parishes. Each county has a name. The majority are named after people. More than 30 are named for George Washington, the first president of the United States. Among those counties with geographic names, the most common word is lake. Many counties are also named for Native American tribes, including Appomattox in Virginia and Tishomingo in Mississippi. And some counties were named for areas of England, such as Essex and Suffolk counties, or for members of the British aristocracy, such as Hanover and Loudoun. Unlike states, neither counties nor cities are mentioned in the Constitution. The founders let the states decide what powers they would give to the counties, if any. At first, counties just enforced state laws. But after World War I and World War II, the U.S. population increased sharply, and more people moved to cities. States needed help. They were unable to govern effectively from their capitals, so the power of counties began to grow. Today, counties handle child welfare, libraries, transportation, consumer protection, economic development, and environmental protection. An average of about 100,000 people live in America's counties. The smallest county, measured by population, is Loving County, Texas. Fewer than 100 people live there. The county with the largest population is Los Angeles County, California. Almost 10 million people live there. The top four most densely populated counties are in New York City. New York County, New York, has about 71,000 persons per square mile. The top four least densely populated counties are in Alaska. Those counties have less than one person per square mile. Across the United States, most counties are losing population. In fact, an increasing number of U.S. counties are dying. Experts say counties die because they have increasingly older populations, a low birth rate, and a poor economy. They say it is difficult for such counties to retain or attract younger people. Kenneth Johnson is a senior demographer and professor of sociology at the University of New Hampshire. He told the Associated Press news agency that these counties are in a pretty steep downward spiral. The young people leave, and the older adults stay in place and age. Unless something dramatic changes, for instance, new development, such as a meatpacking plant to attract young Hispanics, these areas are likely to have more and more natural decrease. If not for immigrants, 194 more counties across the U.S. would have lost population in recent years. Even though they are important to their local populations, the vast majority of counties will never receive national attention. But in November, every 4 years, the media talks a lot about several counties, including Hamilton County in Ohio, Bucks and Chester counties in Pennsylvania, and Hillsborough and Pinellas counties in Florida. These are swing counties, counties where voters change every few years, or at least change their minds about which political party to vote for. Presidential candidates often fight for these voters, and often political observers say results from these swing counties predict which way the rest of the state will go. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
A group of college students is hoping to place a satellite powered only by water into an orbit around the moon. The students are from Cornell University in the state of New York. They are taking part in a competition called the Cube Quest Challenge. It is a program of NASA, the American Space Agency. The Cornell team is called the Cislunar Explorers. The word cislunar means between Earth and the Moon. The challenge is simple: to design, build, and deliver flight-qualified small satellites. NASA officials say the satellites must be able to perform advanced operations near and beyond the moon. 10 teams are taking part in the competition. But the Cislunar Explorer satellites are different. They are the only ones using water to power their spacecraft. The idea for a water-powered vehicle came from Mason Peck, who works at Cornell University. He once worked as NASA's chief technologist. He has always wanted to use something other than rockets to push spacecraft beyond Earth. A lot of the mass we send into orbit these days is in the form of rockets, the only way we get anything into space, he said in a Cornell press release. But what if we could use what's already there? If we could do that, if we could refuel spacecraft while they're already in space. The spacecraft is shaped like the English letter L. It measures about 30 centimeters in length, and the two pieces are connected. Water is stored in the lower part of the satellite. The sun will separate the water into two elements, hydrogen and oxygen. When one combines hydrogen and oxygen with a spark, an explosion results. This provides a forward movement, known as thrust. The Cislunar Explorer team has an unusual way to guide its spacecraft. The idea is to copy how old-time sailors used the moon, sun, and stars to fix their position on the oceans. The satellite is equipped with cameras. The cameras will take pictures of the sun, Earth, and the moon and compare their positions and their size. Based on where the sun, moon, and Earth are at any given time, the Cislunar explorers will do the mathematics to find their position. The competition is being held in four parts. The Cornell team has been among the top three competitors during parts one and two. The winners of the third stage will be announced in about a month. The final three winners will be announced in early 2017. They will get to ride on NASA's Space Launch System in early 2018. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
What do otters, chimpanzees, and one species of crow have in common? All three are animals. They also use tools. Scientists have long known that a crow native to New Caledonia is able to use tools. The birds use them to remove food from deep inside holes and crevices. Now, researchers have discovered a second species of crow that uses tools. Researchers with the San Diego Zoo reported on their experiments with Alala crows, a species from the Hawaiian Islands. There are no more Alala crows living in the wild, but there are some of the birds still living in a protected area in Hawaii. They are considered critically endangered. In an experiment, the researchers placed pieces of food in crevices inside a big piece of wood, the holes too deep for the birds to reach with their beaks. But by using small pieces of wood held in their beaks, the birds quickly found a way to get the food. The scientists said the crows demonstrated the ability to reach food in those cannot reach it places. The birds used small objects as tools, sometimes changing them by shortening a too long stick. They also made tools from plant material. Tool use is exceedingly rare in the animal kingdom, said Christian Rutz of the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. He led the study, which was published in the scientific journal Nature. Current evidence strongly suggests that tool use is part of the species' natural behavior pattern, Rutz said. It is not just something that happened in captivity. Using tools comes naturally to Alala, he added. These birds had no specific training prior to our study, yet most of them were incredibly skilled at handling stick tools, and they even quickly got the food in demanding jobs. There are more than 40 species of crows and ravens, a similar bird. Many crows and ravens live far from cities in hot, humid areas. Rutz said this means it is possible that other undiscovered tool users could be out there. Kevin McGowan is an expert on birds with Cornell University in New York State. He spoke to VOA on Skype. He said finding out that the crows use tools is an important discovery.
It kind of makes us rethink how to look at the whole tool use idea now and gives us a little more ammunition to go out there and look for things that we may have overlooked before.
Alalas are not the only intelligent crows to use tools. The other is the New Caledonian crow on New Caledonia Island in the Pacific Ocean. The New Caledonian crow can use tools to remove insects and other food from dead wood and plants. How did these birds learn to use tools? Scientists think their tool-using skills may have resulted in part from conditions in their Pacific island habitat. The two species have one more thing in common: unusually straight beaks. The researchers wondered if this feature might be something they developed over time for holding tools. The birds use their beaks like the way people use thumbs on their hands. All the Alala crows left in the world live in Hawaii. There were less than 20 Alalas left in the late 1990s when scientists decided to bring them into a protected area to increase their population. Now there are over 100 birds living in captivity. The San Diego Zoo said its researchers tested almost all of them, and they determined that the vast majority of them spontaneously used tools. Scientists are working to increase the population so that the Alala can be released back into the wild. They plan to release some of the birds back into the wild later this year. The Alala crows also showed that they are willing to steal from each other. While one did the work of getting the food, another bird took it and ate it. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.